me an opportunity to speak to you. So this is work done with my PhD supervisor, Andreas Winter at Bristol. I'm going to tell you first about the partial transpose map, PPT state, and PPT operations. I'm sure many of you have heard of these before, but I better define those before I go on to talk about PPT pure state transformations. I'll go over the background for bipartite pure state transformations under local operations in classical communication and the phenomenon of catalysis that occurs in that regime, and then talk about the PPT case, and then about catalysis under PPT operations. So first of all, the partial transpose map. It's defined with respect to some split of a space into two parts. So we're dealing with a bipartite Hilbert space. If IJ here denotes an element of an orthonormal product basis on this Hilbert space, then we can define the partial transpose map by the following. These here are just two different ways of writing it, which are convenient at different times. So partial transpose of this kind of basis element for an operator just has the action of performing the transpose only on Bob's side. So the JL there goes to LJ. That's clearly going to be basis dependent in terms of its exact behavior. But the eigenvalues of the partial transpose of a given operator will be the same no matter which basis we use to perform it. So the property of being PPT, or having a positive partial transpose for a state, is well defined. It just means that it doesn't have any negative, its partial transpose doesn't have any negative eigenvalues. Which I've written in another way there. So I'm just using this greater than equal than 0 to denote that this partial transpose of rho is positive semi-definite. It's quite well known that separable states are all PPT states. It's the Perez-Horodesky criteria for separability. And for 2x2 and 2x3 bipartite systems, PPT states and the separable states are actually the same. So the converse of this statement isn't true. For 3 and 3 dimensional systems and above, you can have entangled PPT states. And that's an example of bound entanglement which cannot be distilled into singlet form, even asymptotically and approximately.
Is that a one-to-one equivalence? In other words, entangled PPT states are necessarily bound entanglement and vice versa?
No, that's unlikely. There may be states which are bound entangled that have negative partial transpose.
Okay.
So, yes, the only kind of bound entanglement we currently know of is PPT bound, where you can use the fact that LSEC operations preserve positive partial transpose to show that you can't distill the NPT single states.
Okay, so if it is PPT, then it is known not to have distillable entanglement?
That's correct.
Is that true in all dimensions or just 3x3?
It's true in all dimensions. So yes, the open question is, do there exist states which are unstable, but which have non-positive partial transpose. So now PPT operations. So as usual, quantum operations correspond to completely positive trace of safety maps. Quantum operation side is, we'll call it a PPT operation, if and only if this operation here is also completely positive, where gamma, as before, denotes partial transposition. So if we take partial transpose, then apply this map, and then take partial transpose again, if that combined map is completely positive, then we'll say that psi is PPT map. So what, in other words, what this means is that if like state row has, for any state row that has positive partial transpose, if we apply a PPT map onto just a part of that state, so as in we're thinking there of the part being so a separation of it across the bipartite split, not I'm not explaining this well. It'll be clearer when I come to the next slide. So the point being that we can take just part of our system, take it, apply this map to it, and the remaining system will also have positive partial transpose. And importantly, local operations in classical communication. So any map which can be implemented by local operations in classical communication is a PPT map. And this containment is strict, and we'll see some examples of that strictness later. So something which actually was a bit misleading in, or rather wrong in my abstract for this talk, was that I used the term PPT preserving operations as a synonym for PPT operations, and that's actually not true, as I'll explain. And this is why in the definition we have complete positivity there. So an example of this is the swap operation. So the operation where Alice and Bob just swap their systems. That's clearly a PPT map. So if this system here is PPT, then when they swap their parts, the result will be PPT as well. However, the combined map, so doing a swap on part of a state and identity on another part, so it's a tensor of the swap and the identity, that doesn't necessarily preserve positivity of partial transpose. So if these are two maximally entangled qubits here, and we perform identity on this part of the system and swap on this part, then the result is, well, essentially it's just a pair of maximally entangled qubits shared by Alice and Bob, which clearly actually has negative partial transpose. Other
non-positive partial transpose. Yes, so can I think of PPT operations as being sort of like completely PPT preserving operations?
No. Okay, so then that would be the best one.
Okay, and on your previous slide, I have a question now. Your third point there, if rho is PPT, then psi tensor identity rho is also PPT. Mm-hmm. Can I take that as a definition for PPT operations? In other words, does that go both directions?
That would be the synthesis. Yeah. Okay.
So any operation that preserves PPTness of all states and whose extensions preserve PPTness of all states is PPT.
Exactly.
Great. Thank you.
So why do we care about these things? Well, PPT operations, they have a practical use, which is in the determining whether a given map, given quantum operation, can be performed by LCC is generally very hard. And it's a lot simpler to determine whether the map is PPT. So in fact, you can use the characterization of complete positivity whereby you take the using the state map isomorphism and the I won't go into that too much now actually because it will take too much time, so I'll leave that for a moment. So we can often use this criterion though to rule out the existence of an LOCC procedure to do a certain task. So if we got a map that we want to do, we can check whether it's PPT, basically by checking the positive semi-definiteness of a certain matrix related to the map. And if it's not PPT, then it certainly can't be done by LOCC. Another example would be if you have a POVM, for it to be implementable by LOCC, a necessary condition, not sufficient, is that each of those POVM elements has positive partial transpose, which is an example of the same thing. So another reason we might be interested in this is that it's still an open question, but it might be possible that PPT bound entanglement is the only kind of bound entanglement, in which case the PPT operations take on a sort of more operational meaning. They're the only class of operations. Well, sorry, they're a class of operations which cannot create distillable entanglement. PPT is strictly more powerful than OSTC, as I mentioned before. So an example is you can create PPT bound entangled states from separable states. Another example is that one can deterministically increase the Schmidt rank of a pure state. But still, in general, we don't know that much about the relative power of PPT and OSTC, and that's one of the motivating things behind this work. Okay, so bipartite pure state transformations in general. The question is, in a given class of operations, LOCC, PPT, whatever you like, can we deterministically transform a state psi into a state, phi into psi? Well, if the class contains local unitaries, and all the ones I'm going to talk about do, the answer will only depend on the Schmidt coefficients of the initial and final state, because all of the pure states with the same Schmidt coefficients are equivalent to each other up to local unitaries. So I'm going to use this notation here, rho subscript lambda, to denote the density matrix of a pure state with a Schmidt coefficient vector lambda. So some people seem to use different definitions here, but my Schmidt coefficients are numbers which add up to one. So some people would say those are the squares of the Schmidt coefficients, but just to be clear, I'm using that term. I'm calling those Schmidt coefficients. So these are numbers greater than or equal to zero, and they add up to one. Okay, so for LOCC operations, Nielsen gave a necessary and sufficient condition for bipartite pure state transformations, the majorization criterion, which is just this. One can deterministically transform a state with Schmidt coefficient vector lambda into one with Schmidt coefficient vector mu, if and only if the vector lambda is majorized by the vector mu. And what that means is that the following partial sums obey this inequality for all k in this range, where this down arrow here means that I've taken the vector and this it's a vector with its components in non-increasing order. So the first one in this sum means that the largest Schmidt coefficient of in this vector is smaller than the largest Schmidt coefficient in this vector. The next one means that the sum of the first two largest is smaller than the sum of the second two largest. Okay, and so this is a quick diagram to kind of get that across in a more immediate fashion. This here is the simplex of let's say Schmidt coefficient vectors which have up to three non-zero components. So at the corners here, we've just got things corresponding to pure states. They're all pure states. I mean, product states. And here is the maximally entangled state of Schmidt rank 2. And here's the maximally entangled state of Schmidt rank 3. So a point on this actually corresponds to many different pure states, depending on the Schmidt basis for the state. And we can focus our attention solely on a small region of this, which is reflected around into these different parts under the action of permutations on the Schmidt coefficient vector. So this region here are the Schmidt coefficient vectors which are ordered in this non-increasing fashion that I mentioned. And then the other ones are just obtained by taking a point in there and you flip around a couple of the components and you get, so for instance here, if you flip around the first and second components, you map this into this. Here's a state. I can't remember what its exact Schmidt coefficient vector is, but what the majorization criteria tells us is that from this state, we can deterministically transform it under LOCC into anything in this region here, this green region here. It can be reached deterministically by LOCC from anything in this region here. And then these ones, we can't go to or from them using LOCC in these regions. So I think I first saw this in a book by Karol Zhukovsky, who sort of described this as being like a light cope, which is quite a nice way of thinking of it. So these can be in our past, and these can be in our future, and these are kind of space-like separated points. Okay.
Sorry?
Where does the state with the red dot?
It's like 6 over 10, 4 over 10, and 3 over 10, and 1 over 10. Just some random thing with Schmidt rank 3. That's nothing important. Okay, so not that long after, but kind of in a way surprisingly long after, given the simplicity of its demonstration,
Jonathan and Plenio demonstrated that a phenomenon kind of analogous to chemical catalysis can occur for pure state transformations under LOCC. And I tell you, it seems surprisingly long, but it's easy to say that in hindsight, given the ease of its demonstration. But it's a rather surprising effect, so that probably explains why it took, well, a number of months before it was, several months before it was discovered. So, as we saw on this slide, we can have, kind of incomparable states. States in here don't majorize this state, and this state doesn't majorize those ones, and correspondingly, transformation, deterministic LOCC transformations between them are impossible. Here are two examples of a pair of incomparable states. They're not interconvertible deterministically by LOCC. Now, if we have a third state with Schmidt coefficient vector chi here, and we look at the tensor product of this state and this state, and the tensor product of this state and this state, I'm kind of abusing terminology there and just calling those states rather than Schmidt coefficient vector because it's easier. Then the Schmidt coefficients of the new states are given by the tensor products of these vectors. And then we're just putting them in the right order. So there's the ordered Schmidt coefficients of this new one for lambda 1 and here for lambda 2. And then written underneath for the sums, the partial sums up to each place of these, so it's like accumulating these Schmidt coefficient vectors. You can see that even though there's no majorization relation between these two, in this case, the partial sums on the bottom row are always greater than the ones on the top, which means that we can perform this transformation deterministically using LOCC, even though we can't do this one. So what it looks like is we've just sort of added on some other state, and it's magically allowed us to do this transformation, which is kind of an artifact of, I guess, the way I can write this just as a tensor product of two things. It sort of looks like this isn't involved in any part of the process, but of course that's not true. It's just that we've somehow contrived that by the end of it, this process, which will certainly involve transformations on both systems, we can recover a system which is identical to the catalyst state that we had at the beginning, and that's where it gets its name from. So point worth noting here, future reference, is that a maximally entangled state can't act as a catalyst. If it's not so hard to see what will happen if you have a maximally entangled state. Its Schmidt coefficients are just a uniform distribution over, say, k things. So when you take this tensor product, each of the Schmidt coefficients in the original states is just going to be taken to k Schmidt coefficients in the new one, which have a value of the original coefficient divided by k. So the ordering isn't changed, and when you compare the these cumulative sums, you won't have any change in the majorization relation. So whatever the majorization relation is in the first place, it will be preserved by tensoring with maximally entangled states. Now, quite recently, Turgut and Klimesh have both written papers where they've given
necessary and sufficient conditions for the existence of a catalyzed LFCC transformation to exist between two pure states. And they can be written, these conditions, and they're essentially a whole continuum of inequalities which must be satisfied, can be written in terms of the Reni entropies of the Schmidt coefficients and some related functions. So I'll just define these Reni entropies, which are kind of a generalization of the normal Shannon entropy probability distributions. So for T in the range 0 to infinity, the definition is as follows. I won't read these out, but the one thing to notice is that this actually is continuous in the range, in this whole range here. These values are the limiting values of this expression as you take T to these various special points. So notably here, it's actually just equal to the Shannon entropy at T equals 1. And at T equals 0, for instance, it's just equal to the logarithm of the number of non-zero components of this Schmidt coefficient vector, i.e. the Schmidt rank. The related functions I mentioned are these f sub t, which are very much like the Reni entropies, except now t is negative, and we've got a sign flip on here, which means that they're still one thing it does is it means that they're still sure convex functions, which I won't go into that now, because it's not fine. But the result of Turgut and Kimmich, and if you want to look at this, I recommend looking at Turgut's paper rather than Kimmich's, because it's a bit more complete and shorter. The result then is that if you've got two bipartite pure states with different Schmidt coefficient vectors, and the Schmidt coefficient vectors don't both have zero components equal to zero in them, so you can just throw away any, like, throw away zeros and one until it doesn't have any left, then there exists a pure state, a catalyst state, which enables this process to happen by LFCC if and only if these conditions are satisfied. So you can see, like, as I said, there's kind of a continuum of these conditions. All of these functions, the Reni entropies, these related quantities here, and these functions have to strictly decrease in order for that to be possible via catalysis.
Definition of Reni entropy. What's the notation for S sub infinity? Minus log of lambda 1 decreasing.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. That's slightly obscure. So again, I'm using this down arrow to indicate that I put this into a put these coefficients into non increasing order. So this just is the minus the log of the largest one.
Okay.
Yeah.
These F functions, like, I have a good feeling for the Reni entropy, and basically what Turgut's result is saying is that in order for there to be a catalyzable transformation, the state that you start with has to have lower Reni entropy for every one. Mm-hmm. But then there's also these F functions, and I don't yet have an intuition for what these are.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could see them as a generalization of Reni entropies to negative numbers, in a sense. The important point is that they are sure convex, which means that all of these functions are non-increasing when applied to. If you take one of these and apply it to a given probability distribution, if you apply it to a probability distribution which majorizes that, it will be less.
So they are entropy-like functions, and they're sort of negative index Reni entropies.
Yes.
Okay. And for zero, for t equals zero, does it coincide with S sub t?
No, actually it doesn't. The S sub t one, the fact that you can't increase the Schmidt coefficient is kind of, I guess, but it's got to be encoded by these, the one. So if you try and increase the Schmidt coefficient, well, that means that this guy is going to have some zeros. By the definition, it'll be negative infinity, and that'll be that. So this is kind of just saying that the product of the
Oh, well, it's also encoded by this, actually. So yeah, it's not quite the same.
Right. So that 0-1 doesn't come into it somehow.
OK, so some general remarks then about PPT pure state transformations. These are some necessary conditions for deterministic pure state transformation under PPT operations. And they're based on some operationally defined quantities. So just as we have the normal LOCC entanglement cost and distillable entanglement for states, we can define a PPT entanglement cost and distillable entanglement, where the only difference is we change LOCC operations for PPT ones. For the entanglement cost and entanglement, the distillable entanglement, they turn out both to be equal to the LOCC ones. There's a result in this paper by Rains, which I should have actually mentioned earlier, but it's a PPT, it's called a semi-definite program for distillable entanglement, where he shows that they can't, PPT operations can't asymptotically increase like the number of singlets that you have. And this result kind of follows from that and the greater power of PPT. I won't go too much into it because we've definitely got time. But they both turn out to be equal to the essentially the entropy of entanglement as for LOC, as for LOCC. By exact distillable, entanglement there, I mean the asymptotic rate at which we can produce EPR pairs of perfect fidelity using that class of operations. So in the other one, normally we only have to make some state which has fidelity one with a bunch of singlets as we go to in the limit of large copies. Whereas here we're demanding that for each finite case, we actually want to get exact EPR pairs out of it. And that turns out to be given by the Rennie entropy of infinity of the Schmidt coefficient vector. And the exact entanglement cost turns out to be given by the Rennie entropy at 1/2. And that's actually just a result from a paper by Aldinert, Plenio, and Isert, which I should have referred to there, but I forgot. And this is a pretty simple extension of what's in Rain's paper. So these kind of by definition have to be non-increasing under PPT operations, or you'd find a contradiction. So clearly a necessary condition is that for this PPT operation to occur is that these quantities do not increase, these Rennie entropies do not increase for these values of T. Okay, so those are some necessary conditions. Now, the existence of a PPT map taking a pure state to another pure state can actually just be formulated as a semi-definite program, but it's generally quite complicated and very, well, it's not that complicated to express necessarily, but it is difficult to analyze the solutions to. So instead of looking at that, we'll start by just what we've done, in fact, only is to look at the case where our initial state is maximally entangled. And it's a maximally entangled isotropic state of Schmidt rank K. So it has a large deal of symmetry, and we use that to restrict the form of the map that we can have. And then our final state, we leave it could be anything. And you find that any mixed state. And you find that this process is possible under PPT if and only if the solution of this semi-definite program, please don't worry too much about the details of that. I just wanted to kind of show you what it looks like, is less than or equal to one. So we're interested here at the moment only with pure final states. So that actually allows us to make some more simplifications. So I'll define this quantity here, T of K lambda, where K is an integer describing the Schmidt rank of the initial maximum entangled state, and lambda is the Schmidt coefficient vector of the final state, to be the solution to this here semi-definite program, the details of which, again, are not terribly important at the moment. So, but the point is that just following on from this guy, the condition that this is possible is that this thing is less than or equal to one.
because I'm in danger of getting lost, can I ask a question about the previous slide?
Sure.
Because it's getting technical. Okay. We're starting here with a maximally entangled state.
Right.
Now, if I think back to that triangle picture that you drew, starting with the maximally entangled state, I can get anywhere, right?
That's right. So you can get anywhere, using LSTC, you can get anywhere that doesn't increase adhesion. So, for instance, if we start here,
maximal.
So you have to stay, for instance, from here, you can't go anywhere into the body of this simplex, but you can go anywhere along this line. From here, you can go anywhere within the body of the simplex, for instance.
Okay, and this is with LOCC.
Correct.
And now you're asking, what can we do with PPT?
Right, and that sounds boring, right? Because if you can do it with PPT, then you can do anything that you can do with LOCC.
But it's stronger.
It's stronger. That's right. It's a very good question, actually, because I almost forgot to sort of point that out. And it sounds totally dull. I mean, in terms of going to any state with the same or lower strip rank, well, we can do anything, but we could do that with LSTC anyway.
Right.
The thing is, as we'll see, PPT operations actually increase the strip rank.
Okay.
So we're going to be able to start here, and we'll be able to go somewhere, some places inside here. And that's what I'll show you.
But it will only give you bound, extra entanglement. Well, no, maybe that's not. Because it can give you bound entanglement, but you can't create distillable entanglement.
Starting from here, from a separable state, you certainly can't go anywhere at all using PPT.
Sure.
In the set of pure states.
Right.
Because any pure state, which is entangled, does violate the PPT criteria.
Oh, right.
Yes, good point. Good point. So, indeed, if you start here, you can't go anywhere new in the set of pure states from PPT. But if you start here, then you can, because you're not starting with set of states like entangled state.
Okay, but since these are pure states, all the entanglement is distillable, right?
That's correct.
And therefore, when I increase the Schmidt rank,
yes.
I can't increase the entanglement.
The entanglement as measured by... as measured by the edge.
Right.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah,
thanks.
Exactly. Okay.
So where do I get to? Here. Okay. So finding any feasible point of this primal program would tell us, which gives an objective value less than or equal to 1, tells us that the corresponding PPT transformation is possible.
But there's also the dual program, the semi-definite program, which is dual to this one. And dual feasible points of this give us lower bounds on the optimal value of this by the weak duality of STPs. And so the dual object for any dual feasible point is a lower bound on this TK lambda. So if we can show using this that find a dual feasible point such that the dual objective is greater than 1, then that shows that the corresponding transformation is forbidden because this TK lambda is certainly greater than 1, and so no go. Okay, so trying to actually solve this and prove analytically what the solution is proves too taxing. For me, so
I noticed from numerics that I was running that it seems like the optimal solution always occurs when the rank of this operator here, which has one of the constraints is that it's positive semi-definite, is actually always seems to be 1 for the optimal solutions. So I just chucked in an additional constraint that this has to be 1 and had a look to see if I could then solve it analytically. And it turns out you can. It's a bit of a mess, though. So if you let D be the Schmidt rank of the final of the goal state, then we find that this T1, which is the dual program, the dual semi-definite optimization problem plus this rank constraint, gives you this formula here, where C star is the smallest number in this range satisfying this equation, and if none of them are satisfied, then see star is D. And where now we're, for convenience, I'm using this up arrow to denote the Schmidt coefficient vector put in non-decreasing order. So that's a big old mess. But it gives us, certainly gives us a lower bound on T, because it's a lower bound on the optimal value of the dual, the unconstrained dual problem, clearly. So we certainly have this necessary condition now that this T1 must be less than or equal to 1 in order for this process to be possible. And for the case where we start with a rank 2 maximally entangled state and want to go to something with Schmidt rank 3, anything with Schmidt rank 3, we can actually find a primal solution which attains this rank constrained dual optimum, and therefore by this duality property for SDPs show that it is in fact the optimum. So in that case, the k equals 2, d equals 3 case, TE is equal to T1. And then so just writing that out, simplifying all that nonsense on the previous page, we get that the necessary condition, necessary and sufficient condition for the feasibility of this process for Schmidt rank 3 here is given by this equation in terms of, again, the non-decreasing ordered Schmidt coefficients. And in fact, from I guess from this and basically all these numerical observations, I conjecture that T is always, this optimal dual point is always attained by something with rank 1. When that expression I showed you earlier is rank 1, so that these two values are actually equal and that it's necessary and sufficient. But I haven't been able to show that yet. Anyway, so much for that. It's kind of exact, or rather, so much for uncatalyzed PPT transformations.
How does the group of entangled states of Schmidt rank 3 that you can reach compare to the group of all Schmidt rank 3 states of lesser historical entanglement?
I will show you that in in a few slides.
So the qualitative question about PPT operations then, well, does this catalysis phenomenon occur for pure states, pure state transformations under PPT? So in other words, are there states with states lambda and mu such that this process isn't possible using PPT, but when you add a catalyst state into the mix, you can do it using PPT? Well, it turns out there is, and I'll show it and also give a kind of partial sort of condition for when it's possible. So it turns out it's always possible to find a solution to this the primal SDP I showed you, which gives this upper bound on T, K lambda, and to find a dual solution which gives this lower bound on it. So notice that the Renyi entropy at 1/2 of the Schmidt coefficient vector appears in this expression. And all that is actually is just the square of the sum of the square roots of the Schmidt coefficients. So it has quite a simple like expression. Now, these Renyi entropies are additive. So when I chuck in my catalyst state, this Renyi entropy at 1/2, they just add for the two. And if I'm using a if I decide, despite what we learned from LOCC, to use a maximally entangled catalyst state, because it's easier to deal with, then the Renyi entropy at 1/2 of the entanglement Renyi entropy at 1/2, so the Renyi entropy at 1/2 of the Schmidt coefficient vector of uniform distribution over C things, so for maximally entangled state of Schmidt rank C, is just log C. Okay, so using those two facts and substituting them into here, we get the following lower and upper bounds on this T for going from a maximally entangled state of rank K to lambda with a maximally entangled catalyst of Schmidt rank C. So our initial state, in fact, is just a maximally entangled state of rank Schmidt rank K times C. going from that to this guy here. So that's just the Schmidt coefficients of our final state with the catalyst there. It's got an upper and lower bound on it equal to these things. And then take the limit C goes to infinity, both of these tend to this value here. So it turns out that a necessary and sufficient condition for the transformation written here, this catalyzed transformation with a maximally entangled catalyst of Schmidt rank C, to be possible for some sufficiently large C is just this, because this is both an upper and lower bound on this T here, which needs to be less than or equal to 1 for the transformation to be possible. So clearly, you know, if this limit here is less than 1, then that means that for some C, it's possible. And if the limit's greater than 1, that means there's no value C such that T is less than or equal to 1. So it's not possible. So equivalently, the condition can be written as follows. The Renyi entropy at 1/2 of our goal state has to be less than the Renyi entropy at 1/2 of our initial maximally entangled state, which is just log K. So that kind of is reminiscent, at least, of these conditions of Turgot for catalyzed LOCC. Except it's only at one point. But that shouldn't be too surprising, actually, because we're not going to get anything very interesting happening here, since the Renyi entropies of our initial state are the same for all parameters. The Renyi entropy of a maximally entangled thing is just log of its Schmidt rank for every parameter. And also, Renyi entropies are non-increasing in this parameter, so this is kind of the first place where it becomes relevant. Okay, so now the diagram that John wanted to see. So here's our, just rewritten again from a few slides back, the necessary and sufficient condition for when D is 3 and K is 2 for the PPT transformation. So that's without a catalyst. And then I'm writing out the one for allowing an arbitrarily large maximally entangled catalyst. It's just this. And so you can probably see from here that, well, there's a gap. And it's clear on this diagram here, which is just that one kind of chamber of the diagram from before written out again. So our initial state, so it's K equals 2, so it's the Schmidt rank 2 maximally entangled state. We're starting here. Where can we go? Well, if we don't have a catalyst, then we can go anywhere into this region here. So again, of course, we can go anywhere down this line. You can do that just using LOCC. But we also gain all this bit here. If we do have a maximally entangled catalyst, then we can do better. We can go anywhere in this region here. OK, so we've learned that catalysis does occur under PPT, and that unlike LOCC, maximally entangled states can be catalysts. And since, well, importantly, these states here, they're Renyi entropy at 1, so they're von Neumann entropy is not larger than it is for the maximum entangled state, which, so it doesn't break what we learned earlier about these PPT monotones.
Or can you basically get to every feasible state you can reach for the maximum?
With catalysis, you can. Because, like,
so if someone's trying to sell me maximally entangled catalysts, I shouldn't say, you know, I'd like to have a non-maximally entangled.
That's right. Yeah. Because, so, the lowest Renyi entropy for which, the lowest parameter for Renyi entropy which we can show is monotone for PPT is 1/2. This, in fact, this catalysis result shows that for anything less than 1/2, they're not monotone. They can increase. Because this is a necessary and sufficient condition. So you can, there are states lambda such that their Renyi entropy at 1/2 is equal to log K, but anything less than 1/2 is greater than 1. So yeah, you're right. You should say yes. And yeah, as for other types of catalysts or other types of initial states, I don't really know yet. Although I would venture, I'd hazard a very tenuous conjecture that just based on the
nature of these monotones and the result of Turgis and Klimesh, but perhaps it's just that it's necessary and sufficient for all of any entropies that are greater than half to be monotones, rather to be strictly, I'm not quite sure, but basically they should go down. And then you don't care, you certainly shouldn't care about anything lower than one half. Then for the negative ones, you should throw them away to a two, because you can increase the Schmidt rank. So they, you don't want them either. So that would be kind of, based on the small amount of evidence we've got, that would be my guess. But no.
Sorry, you may have just answered this, but I'm still confused about it, so I'm going to go ahead and ask. So the maximum entangled states can be catalysts, and furthermore, they are at least as powerful. They're the most powerful catalysts. Is that right?
I guess that's fine.
Okay, so there would be no advantage to having. So in LSTC, I would prefer to have a less than maximally entangled state as a catalyst.
That's right, yeah. You have to. But I can only say that that's true for the case where your initial state is also maximally entangled. It may be that for non-maximally entangled initial states, you could do better using a non-maximally entangled catalyst if you've done the PPT. There's no evidence yet for that. Okay, so just in summary, we've given a necessary and sufficient condition for this PPT pure state transformation to occur whenever this has Schmidt rank 3 or less. We've given a necessary condition for any of these transformations where you start with maximally entangled state, which is conjectured to be sufficient if this rank constraint turns out to be justified. So if the dual solution always obeys the rank constraint. And then we've shown that PPT catalysis occurs and that maximally entangled states, unlike under LOTC, can be catalysts under PPT transformations and given a condition for that type of transformation. That's all. Any more questions?
Do you have, so this was all, the stuff PPT tells us was the second half of your talk was all about starting with a maximally entangled state of bounded of certain Schmidt rank and where can you get from there.
Yes.
Do you have any exploration of starting with other states? Because it seems in the LSOC case, unless I'm understanding wrong, that the maximum, the flat Schmidt rank states, maximally entanglements, are really, you know, they're fairly boring. Like you can't catalyze those at all.
That's fine. Right. Yeah.
And so what it seems that what we're seeing here is that something that was boring in the LOCC case has interesting behavior in the PPT case, but you don't be on that at all.
No, not really. Although it's worth, the non-catalyzed stuff is kind of interesting because there, what something which was really nice at LOCC, this medularization criterion, seems to turn into something pretty horrible for PPT. But then there's a sort of, perhaps there's an escape route from that through this catalysis. Things become nice again. Indeed, it would be. It's entirely possible to do some very small numerical simulation, small numerical optimization to look at this. But it is much the at the full semi-definite program for different initial and final states is just a lot bigger. But yeah, you could certainly test some ideas for that.
In LSTC catalysis, there are some scenarios where you can use bound catalysis.
Yes, I believe that's true. Well, okay, so we're talking about a different regime clearly because it's mixed. No.
Yeah.
But there's this activation entanglement. Right. Is that the same? Is that the same?
I'm just wondering if in cases like this is.
I don't think I know enough about that to answer you properly, but. Yeah.
So I actually the operation of definition of PPT. Is there a class of physical? Is there a physical interpretation? So LMCC is clearly ours, and we'll have to act separately on other systems.
Yeah, I think that if you have three PPT bound entanglement and post selection, then you get PPT maps. But I'm not 100% sure that's right.
Does post selection alone give you?
Actually, no, that can't be right, because yes, post selection would give you the opportunity to, where you could just do everything except increase the Schmidt rank using ICC. So that's wrong. It's more.
But
it's not just free PPT down the tangent. That does give you some more than LOCC, but not the whole set of PPT. I'm not quite sure.
This may be an obvious question. How does these PPT maps compare to separable PAVMs? PAVMs where every other is separate.
Okay, so as in PPT PVMs versus separable PVMs.
Yeah.
So you do get, again, like strictly more power. So, there'll be PVMs which you can do using PPT that you can't with separable. Just that will follow from the. This difference between PPT and separable states. So I guess, if your PVMs are on a 2x2 system, then they'd be the same, because they're the same for the states as well. It carries through the PVM elements. Separable PVMs just have to have separable PVM elements. Mm-hmm. So it all carries through, and 2x3, but the bigger ones, then there will be the things you can do, I'm sure, that can't be.
Is there anything new about analysis of separable origins?
You can't increase shrink rank. Catalysis in general. No, but there has been a bit of work on the analogous problem, the kind of overall problem of pure state transformations under separable maps. So by Ruthis and Georgiou, who've given a necessary condition for attack, which is that the product of the Schmidt coefficient methods goes down. No, it goes up. It goes down. That makes sense. But that's only a necessary condition. And also that the Schmidt rank can't increase. Yeah. And then for catalysis, I don't know. It's a lot harder to. It's hard. Well, certainly it's hard to directly calculate some calculations for separable things, because.
So one simple thing you can do with catalysis is analysis itself catalysis. So it's where the transformation doesn't work with just one copy or two copies or.
That occurs on PPT.
That's one.
That does occur on PPT. So it's almost the case of self-catalysis.
You're kind of doing it.
Yes.
Maximum entanglement.
Yes. I should have mentioned that. Yeah, so it does.
Any questions? Not hear the applause.